hello all. Welcome to our fourth episode of Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. We're here this week to recap episodes 105 and 106. But before we get started, I'll remind you again that you can always contact us to talk about the show on our Twitter, NATW Podcast, our email, natwpodcast@gmail.com, or our Tumblr, which is Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast at Tumblr. And we've got a fair few followers now. We've hit over 100 on Twitter, which is cool. And yes, please always talk to us about anything that you want to hear on the show. I'm Natalie, as you may know by now, and we're joined this week by my co-host and brains of the operation, Karen.
Oh, I like that.
And I was considering calling you the Styles to my derpy Scott, but you know. For the first time as well, we have a third co-host who is one of our friends from Hyperball. It's Tariq, and he created the Hyperball forums as well as being a content writer for Hyperball. He's running our battleships, which you helpfully got Steric through to the next round on, but he's doing all of the battleships programming on Hyperball at the moment. He's also a host of Sorkin Series and Vampire Hype. He is also a Teen Wolf fan, and he's here this week to join in on the recap with us. So he's our third extra host. So everyone say hi.
Hi.
Hi, Tariq.
I'm so excited. I love Teen Wolf so much.
Karen, do you want to go ahead with the first recap?
Sure. First one up is 105, which is called The Tell. The show starts off with Lydia and Jackson arguing about which movie they're going to watch that night. In the end, though, we all know that Lydia's going to win out. And Jackson goes inside the video store to get the notebook, of course. He actually finds an employee dead and is nearly attacked by the Alpha, but the Alpha sees the marks on the back of Jackson's head, and he runs off, and Lydia appears to have caught at least a glimpse of the Alpha. Scott and Derek watch the aftermath from above, and Derek tells them that if Scott doesn't kill with the Alpha, then the Alpha will kill Scott, and Derek again offers to help Scott. The next day, Kate gives Allison an early birthday present. It's a necklace that's also a family heirloom. Kate tells Allison that if she ever wants to learn more about her family, to look up the symbol on it. Because it's Allison's birthday, Scott convinces her to skip school and they spend the whole day together walking around in the woods. Meanwhile, Styles tries to figure out what's going on with Jackson and Lydia. He visits Lydia at home and finds that she probably did see something outside the video store, but a mixture of fear and pretty heavy prescription drugs to keep her calm have confused her, and she's convinced that it was just a mountain lion. Styles finds a video of the Alpha escaping the video store on her phone, but he deletes it. Kate and two other hunters visit Derek at his house. After some provocation, Derek attacks the two men, but Kate takes him down with a powerful taser. She wants to find out who the Alpha is, but after realizing that Derek doesn't know, she decides to kill him. Derek escapes, but not before finding out that the hunters didn't kill his sister and use her as bait to bring back to Beacon Hills. It was actually the Alpha. Then lastly, after the parent-teacher conference, and after Scott and Allison get caught by their parents for skipping school, a mountain lion shows up in the parking lot. Chris Argent shoots and kills the animal, and a significant look passes between Chris and Scott before the credits roll. Okay, so what were your favorite lines, Tariq?
So my favorite lines were very Styles-specific, because he's my favorite character. My first favorite line is when Styles is talking to Danny, and he's trying to find out what happened. And he's just like, one more question. Do you find me attractive? And then he falls off his stool.
Yeah. It's a beautiful moment. It is.
Oh, it's so amazing.
His preoccupiedness with that concept of not being attractive to gay guys is very... It's a good running gag. And I don't often like running gags. And this one really works. So.
And then my second favorite line is when Lydia's like really just hyped up on drugs. And her mom comes in and is like, hey, there's a Styles here to see you. And she's like, what the hell is a Styles? And it like totally associated it with the Harry Potter musical. Like, what the hell is a Hufflepuff?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, guys, I didn't even think about that.
I didn't either until he said it, but I've actually seen the what the hell is a Styles on like fan-made shirts and stuff, because it's just it's a very relevant question, and I think one that is asked by all outsiders when people keep going, no, you have to watch this show, Styles, and everyone's like, what? What is Styles?
Okay, Natalie, and what about you?
So my first one, it was not exactly a funny line. It was when Styles and his father go to the video store when they get the call for the murder, and sheriff is trying to kind of help the situation, and he's talking to Jackson, and then Jackson starts to really get aggressive and abusive, kind of starts putting him down about being a rent-a-cop and, you know, whatever. Styles is kind of watching it, like, really angry and upset, and then he calls out, he's like, oh, whoa, is that a dead body? And it's kind of like he was distracting people from, like, Jackson shaming the sheriff, and I thought it was an incident where Styles really played up his ADD, and a couple of episodes ago I said that he used to do all this wacky stuff out of his control, and now that he is in a situation where he's really dealing with serious things, people aren't taking him seriously because he has this past lack of control. But on the flip side, this time he kind of uses that impression of himself to look after his dad, if you know what I mean. So I kind of really liked that moment. The other one that I had was in the parent-teacher conference between the sheriff and the coach, who's also Styles' economics teacher. Basically, the whole conference was fabulous when he was talking about how Styles was, you know, very intelligent, didn't focus the right way and all of that, and how he'd written his whole last question on his exam detailing the history of the circumcision. And the father's like, oh, well, that's historically relevant, right? And the coach is just like, I teach economics. But the beautiful moment was when he comes in and he's like, so you're here for Styles? And he's like, yeah, I'm Sheriff Stilinski. And he's like, you named your kid Styles Stilinski? And the sheriff is like, no, it's just what he likes to be called. And the coach is like, oh, well, I like to be called Cupcake. It was just so bizarre. And yeah. I really like both of those adults a lot. I mean, everyone in the show really brings it, but those two are very, very funny.
Yeah, and I liked it in one of the lines after that when the sheriff, I don't even remember what he said, but then he calls Coach Cupcake and yeah.
Yeah, he kind of goes, it's after they're talking about Styles' name and the sheriff goes, maybe we should get to the actual conference part of the conference. What do you think, Cupcake? And
yeah,
and Coach goes, I like your thinking. It's really...
I've got a couple of quotes here, too. One of my favorite ones was when they were in the car and they're eating the food and Sheriff Stilinski is saying he wants his curly fries and Styles doesn't want to give them to him because he's looking out for his health. And the sheriff says, I'm carrying a lethal weapon. If I want curly fries, I will have the curly fries. But the best part is when Styles comes back and says, if you think getting rid of contractions in all of your sentences makes your argument any more legitimate, then you are wrong. And just the way he delivers that line, I just love that he picked up on that, you know, yeah. The grammar and stuff like that. And
he's just so clever. Like, it was just, yeah. Because the curly fries line was funny, but the comeback is just beautiful. Like, it was, he's so clever, and his ways of using humor are just, the whole show's ways of using humor is so intelligent. It's not cheap. It's never cheap. And I think it's just very, it can be very wordy, it can be very pithy, and it never talks down to people, really. It's very kind of high-level, intellectual, witty, wordy humor, and I really, 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 really love that.
Yeah, good segue, because that's the point I wanted to make with my next quote, is when Kate says, really, a dog joke, we're going there, and that's the best you've got. Mm. The show is so aware of itself, and it knows what it could potentially be, but then it just goes beyond that as something even better, because, you know, they could have given them a cheesy dog joke to put in there, but Kate, you know, the character kind of points it out and says, yeah, we're better than that, and, you know, just kind of is very aware of itself, I guess, is what I want to say, and I really like that about the show.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so now we're going to get into the discussion of this episode. And the first thing that I wanted to bring up was about the necklace. And this is just sort of a quick thing, but I don't know about you guys, but when I first started watching this and Kate gave Allison the necklace, I honestly thought that it was going to be like a kryptonite thing. And I thought the necklace was, I don't know, going to be something that would either harm Scott or clue Allison in on the fact that he was a werewolf or something like that. And I don't know why I had that in my mind, but when I first watched it, that's what I thought. And rewatching it now, I just remembered that. So did you guys think anything like that, or was I just, like, totally out there?
I didn't think anything like that. I just thought it was a pretty necklace.
Yeah, I didn't. I honestly didn't think that either. But, I mean, I did think that Kate's not, she's not actually being that genuine and generous. She obviously does love Allison, but the kind of things that she's doing, it's not like she got her a gift certificate to a bookstore or, you know, took her out for dinner. She's purposely trying to, you know, subtly teach Allison or lure her in or reveal the secrets about the family. And this is the sort of the start of that.
you bring up a really great point in that, like, I mean, Wolfsbane is like a werewolf's kryptonite. Like, so I guess you kind of thought, like, maybe, like, it was like a Wolfsbane necklace or something. But you make up a really good point in, like, they have this daughter who's in this town full of werewolves, and you'd think they would give her something to protect herself from potential werewolves.
Even if and she, like, didn't know what it was, yeah.
Exactly, yeah, like the show could totally go a Vampire Diaries route, and I know neither of you watch it, but,
No, I watch it. I totally love Vampire Diaries. Right.
Yeah, okay. So, like, for Natalie and those listeners who don't watch Vampire Diaries, there's, like, vampires, their kryptonite is something called vervain, but anyone who knows anything about vampires wears vervain, or, like, has vervain on their necklace, or, like, drinks vervain to keep away the vampires. And you'd think that a family of hunters would do the same thing for werewolves. And so I don't know if they plan on doing it later, but, like, you bring up a really good point. I'm surprised that it wasn't, like, a kryptonite necklace.
I'm surprised they're not secretly feeding Allison, like, wolfsbane chopped up into her salads, and so that when she kisses Scott, he's, like, poisoned or something. But yeah, that is a really good point, actually.
I wanted to bring up, too, another quick thing about the Scott and Allison relationship. We'll get this when we get into their relationship, especially in the second season, but this episode right here, for me, is like the height of their relationship that they have with each other. And the whole scene where Allison has her birthday and she doesn't want to tell anybody because she's a little bit older than everybody else. And Scott understands and he guesses correctly why she's older and, you know, why she maybe got held back a grade or whatever. I love that they get each other. And even though Scott's really weird and he does some really strange things, you know, Allison forgives him, and they're just so compatible at this point that I wish they could have just stayed like this forever, because I really enjoy their relationship in this episode.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, is the age thing, like, you guys went to American high schools. Is that big a deal? Like, to be a year older in the same grade? I mean, we had a bit of a mix. Like, we would either have, say, people, you know, either would be 15 turning 16 or 16 turning 17, depending in which part of the year they were born. But would that be seen as that big a deal?
Not really. Like, I know a lot of people who either, like, skipped a grade or, like, got held back or whatever, but it wasn't never, like, a big deal that we'd make fun of them for. Like
oh, you had a
baby. I mean,
it
happens all the time. Like, yeah, like, especially that. Like, it's not very realistic that people would just, like, only say that on her birthday.
I don't know, because in my school, we had a few people who were a couple of years older than everybody else. And I mean, it was less about their age and more about, like, the type of person that they were. Like, you knew that they were sort of like, you know, the bad boy or whatever, and he got held back because he didn't do his grades. He didn't have very good grades or whatever. But I was always, like, the youngest person in my grade, and I was a little, like, self-conscious of it. Like, when I told people my age and when my birthday was and everything, they would be like, oh, wow, you're that young. And I mean, it's different than being older, but yeah, I think it probably just depends on the school and everything. But I didn't see it as a huge deal, but I could understand why people would be surprised and why they may say things like that to Allison. The next one I got is the Derek and Kate relationship. And we talked a little bit about this before, but there was a line in there where Kate says something about him not liking electricity or fire. And I mean, I can understand the fire thing, but the electricity thing got me thinking. And we know that they had a past relationship like that. And I just, it's not so much a discussion point as just wanted to say that that kind of piqued my interest. And I also wanted to mention that the Teen Wolf book, I ordered it and it came in a couple of days ago, so it's sitting on my shelf to be read, and I'm very interested in reading about it and learning more about Derek and Kate's relationship.
This is the point, like, the book is set directly after this episode, and Tariq, I'm not sure how much you know about the Derek and Kate backstory, but yeah, we're getting to the point now where I'm finding it really difficult to watch because it's so sick and it's so twisted. And yeah, I mean, if you do the math based on Kate's date of birth, which you do see in the next season, and on Derek having been still in school when the fire happened, which was 6 years ago, the age gap was he was 16, she was 22 when they were together. So, you know, she comes in and she's like, oh, this one grew up in all the right places kind of thing. And it was just all so horrible and yeah, just really horrid. I just felt so bad for Derek because he was so much more, like, innocent and trusting, and she clearly completely damaged him in so many ways from you know, the start off in a super predatory bad teacher way to the end of, you know, burning down his house and killing his whole family. Just a couple of things, like when she tries to sort of appeal to him and says, oh, you think I'm lying, and he's just like, wouldn't be the first time kind of thing. He just looks so young and damaged, and when he runs out after her, he kind of looks around and he looks really traumatized. He runs out of the house, he looks back once, and that look is really, really, like, so vulnerable. And then they kind of, he turns back and we get this, like, glaring, angry look, and we focus on that. But the first time he turns, the look on his face is just horrible. She's just still so creepy with him, being like, ooh, I'm not sure if I want to kill it or lick it, and it's really, like, it's really messed up, because the first time I watched it, I didn't sort of do the math in regards to Kate's age or anything like that, and I thought that they kind of had a somewhat equal relationship when they were together, that was still bad motives on Kate's part, but that it wasn't as creepy as it apparently canonically was.
That book sounds awesome, though.
Yeah, like, it's pretty good.
I have to get it. I really want to get that book now.
We also got a little bit of feedback on the last episode talking about how we were fairly pro-Derek as far as Derek and Scott, and we kind of were teaming up on Scott a little bit. So I just want to bring this next point up with the Stiles and Scott relationship. And I'm sort of borderline here because, I mean, I love Stiles. He's my favorite character, and, you know, I'm definitely Team Stiles. But in this episode, Scott is out having a nice day with Allison, pretty much not worrying about anything, while Stiles is left to handle everything that's going on back at the school, and Lydia and the dead guy and the repercussions from that. So I just want to know what you guys think about that, because on the one hand, it's so easy to be mad at Scott for basically letting Stiles deal with all of this while he's out having a good time with Allison. But at the same time, I think he's grasping for any sort of normality that he can have in his life right now. He just doesn't want to deal with anything. So do you guys blame Scott for that, or do you understand what he's going through?
I do understand, but I think that there should be, I think for it to be a good friendship, at the moment, it seems like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do this for you and put up with it because we've always been friends. And that's fine if you know someone that well or whatever. But I think that there should be a bit more communication in the, like, hey, I know this is really bad timing, but Allison, birthday, depressed, whatever, I'm just going to go do this. Do you mind doing this today? And I might not be contactable. Like, I will catch up with you tonight. Like, the assumptiveness is the problem to me. Not the actions, but the assumptiveness, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, that does.
I feel like if you're going to skip school and, like, totally ditch out on your best friend and turn your phone off, especially when you're in the middle of this huge thing happening and, like, you're in danger and, like, no one knows what's happening to you, you should probably tell your best friend, like, hey, I'm just going to take Allison out for her birthday. So I'm not going to be available, but I'll tell you how to reach me or something, you know? It's just, that's what I don't like, and I think...
Yeah, he's not very apologetic about it.
Exactly.
It's very kind of, not taking advantage, but a bit presumptuous because of their long-term friendship. And while people who are close sort of do get to do that, it is also, things are really changing, and Stiles is really in the middle of it without any protection or any involvement. Like, he doesn't have to be involved, but he is. And yeah, Scott's still not very appreciative of the fact that he's brought Stiles into this. And there's actually a bit in the next episode where that's sort of addressed in a way that I was quite interested in. So, yeah.
And my last point here is just one that we have talked about a little bit before, but we're getting more on it now. It's this significant look that seems to pass between Chris Argent, Allison's dad, and Scott at the end of the episode. At this point, I think I've decided that Chris knows what's going on. I mean, even if he doesn't have proof that Scott is a werewolf, he's highly, highly suspicious to the point where he's fairly certain that Scott is a werewolf. And I think the reason why he's sort of standing back a little bit is because one of their rules as hunters is that they don't harm the werewolves, they don't kill a werewolf without proof, and especially not if they're still a kid. So I think that might be why he hasn't mentioned anything about it, he hasn't confronted Scott. But what do you guys think? Do you think he knows?
I wasn't quite sure. I mean, as far as the dramatic look, I thought it might have been to do with the fact that they were both, you know, protecting Allison, that Scott had taken Allison off and then pulled her out of the way of the car. But it could be
at least that he knows that Scott knows that there's more to it, that the mountain lion wasn't the be-all and end-all of what was happening, if you know what I mean.
So maybe he doesn't necessarily think that Scott's a werewolf, but thinks that at least Scott does know what's actually going on?
Yeah, potentially, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think he knows that he's a werewolf yet, because I feel like he would have done something more drastic, I think, maybe.
At least with separating Allison and Scott, if not, you know, obviously killing Scott as it's against the code.
Yeah, exactly.
My points, I had a couple of little ones. First of all, when Kate goes up to the house to address Derek, and we kind of get this shot of him just working out inside the house, because apparently that's all he does all day, when he doesn't have anywhere to be lurking. I'm really surprised the house was, like, structurally sound enough for him to have been doing chin-ups off the door frame. I was really like, really? This house is really kind of falling apart. And I just found that whole situation somewhat amusing. And I'm just wondering if you people think that Derek, when he's not driving around being sad or lurking teenagers, whether he literally is just obsessively working out and either mentally trying to block everything out or trying to be as, you know, fit and peak as he possibly can. Like, if he's really that one track at the moment, and if you think that his path is ever going to change from that to learning to live normally again.
You'd think that he would spend more of his, like, aggression and his just his anger at, like, maybe fixing up the house instead of, you know, doing pull-ups off of it.
That's true.
Because, I mean, that house is a mess, and he lives there, and I still don't understand. Like, when he goes upstairs, there isn't a roof. So when it rains, does he sleep in the rain? I don't understand.
He probably thinks he deserves to sleep in the rain. Like, he really's got so much self-hatred. Like, it's just ridiculous. Like, he blames... I mean, the whole basis of the thing is that, even from Kate's implications about their relationship, is that Kate got to burn the house down via being close to Derek. Derek trusted her, and now he blames himself for the fire and his whole family being dead. So he is way full of self-hatred, but yeah, he's very obsessive.
Yeah, I wish he would just, like, get a motel room or something, just live somewhere else other than this decrepit house. I don't know why he has to stay there for two seasons still, so I don't know, maybe he'll go somewhere in the third season.
Yeah, I mean, he can watch some TV, he can, like, read a book, I don't know, he can go to the bowling alley. he just needs... I'm 100% sure, like, and it's not even, like, speculating, it's... I'm 100% sure that he lived relatively normally prior to this, at least his family did. And he just, his head is such a mess. It's just so sad, but so funny. Like, it's...
Yeah.
Anyway, the second part of that scene that interested me, that we did, besides from the sick Kate Derek stuff that I can't even handle, was when Kate was saying to Derek that he, because she kind of goads him when she comes in about them killing Laura, but then she admits that they didn't, the hunters did not kill Laura. And I'm just curious about whether they didn't kill her but found her dead and cut her up afterwards as bait, or if the whole thing, including the cutting in half thing, was the alpha. Because as we see later, the cutting in half thing is a hunter thing. So do you think that they'd found her dead body and used it to try and bait the other werewolves, or whether the entire killing was the alpha?
I was always under the impression that the entire thing was the alpha, but when I really think about it, it is sort of the signature of the hunters to cut them in half like that. But then again, you know, the alpha could have known that and done it on purpose to draw him in, yeah, making him think that it was a hunter thing.
Yeah, because there's just a moment where she says, well, she says we found bite marks on the body, or they found bite marks on the body. And so I don't know if she's talking about we the hunters or they the, like, the cops or the police report. Like, I didn't actually catch whether she said we or they, and I tried to work it out and I couldn't. So that's why I was curious about that.
I wanted to say that it was by the alpha, like the alpha just ripped it in half and then the hunters were just blamed for it, or rather the hunters took blame for it on purpose because they knew that Derek would come out to try to get them for it.
Mm.
But I don't know. It's a really good point that you just made, though.
I, at the moment, am kind of feeling like that the alpha killed her, the hunters found the body and used it, after she was dead. I might be wrong, but that's kind of where I'm at right now. My last thing was about the parent-teacher conference and, like, the interesting bits that we saw there, which was a little bit with Lydia's parents, where they don't seem to know how intelligent she is. They're too wrapped up in their own divorce, and they think that she's damaged in some way. And the teacher's like, actually, she's super bright and a really good student and a good social leader. And then Jackson's parents, who are talking about his kind of obsessive tendencies and need to please due to being adopted, which I found a bit interesting because we see a bit of that with Jackson later on, where he is so eager to please and get validation, and it's clearly not coming from his parents. I didn't feel like his parents were pressuring him whatsoever. It was pressure that he was putting on himself to be something, as opposed to whether it was to his birth parents or his adoptive parents, him putting pressure on himself to be the best in order to get this approval. But I didn't feel like from his parents that they were, you know, driving that. It was all on him, if you know what I mean. It was something that he was developing in himself. They seemed concerned about it. And then obviously we had Stiles' father's conference, which we talked a little bit about, but it also addresses the issue that we've had of Stiles' first name, his real first name. You see, this has caused a fair amount of controversy or discussion in fandom, because on the file, when Cupcake is asking the sheriff about what the first name is, we kind of get a bit of crafty storytelling, and he taps the file rather than saying the name aloud, and the coach picks it up and like tries to read it and figure it out and can't say the name. So we're meant to assume it's something pretty obscure. On the file, we actually see a little bit of the end of the name, and the letters that we see are Genim, which is G-E-N-I-M. And Jeff Davis has already confirmed that this is not actually his first name, so it could either be the middle name and we don't see the first name, like it said, you know, something first name, Genim, Stilinski, or it could be the last half of his first name. So I was just curious about if you guys had any thoughts about any of the parent-teacher stuff or Stiles' name, what you think Stiles' name might be, if we'll ever hear it, or anything like that. It was apparently his mother's father, so his mother might have been of a background somewhere like, you know, Russian or something, a strange kind of European name maybe. So what do you guys got on that?
I love that the coach, like, flipped the file around upside down and sideways just in case, like, he was, like, reading it wrong. He was like, what is this? But I feel like we have to get his name at some point because they've left it so much of a mystery. I mean, unless they want to make it like Home Improvement where you never see Wilson's full face, like, ever. But I don't think they're going to go that route. I feel like it has to do something.
I think that they're going to make it a mystery. I don't know if we'll ever figure it out. He wants to do that because he knows everybody, you know, wants to know Stiles' name, and this is just the little carrot he's dangling in front of us. I honestly don't. I mean, I can't say that he's never going to tell us, but I think, if anything, they're going to keep it a secret till maybe, like, the very last episode or something like that.
Yeah, I don't feel like it could be, a serious plot point. I mean, if it was, that would be interesting, but I don't feel like it can be a serious plot point. However, I really think that, yeah, people have made, like, there's a lot of fan fiction and stuff like that where people have taken that Genim as his name, and they use it as his name, whether it's as a placeholder or if they legitimately think that we know what Stiles' name is. Because if you Google, like, what is Stiles Stilinski's first name, you know, there's Yahoo Answers and crap like that that comes up. But Jeff has confirmed that's not the name. It could just be a total, not typo, but a total, like, set dressing problem where we weren't meant to see any of the letters and they just wrote down a bunch of letters and it's not even his middle name and it's totally irrelevant. But I can't think that Teen Wolf would make that mistake.
Yeah, we're talking about the guy who reshot, like, hands. Yeah. Just kind of like,
yeah. Yeah.
I liked this scene, the different parent-teacher conferences, quite a bit, and I liked the juxtaposition that they had between, especially Lydia and Stiles, I noticed the most.
Mm.
Lydia, you know, the teacher's saying she's very bright, she's a social leader and everything, and you see her looking into the mirror, and she's just, you know, tears are running down her face, her makeup's all smudged, and she's fixing her makeup and putting a smile on her face, and it's like everything that the people think they know about her is wrong, and she really is damaged, but she's so good at covering it up. And then you have Stiles, and I love this one too, when coach was saying that he can't focus, that, you know, he's very bright, but he doesn't put his, you know, energy toward the right things. And then you just see him figuring everything out. And it's like, when it comes down to it and, you know, the stuff that really matters, he definitely puts his talents to the test and comes up with all this stuff for Scott. And I just really love seeing those two things there.
It was very well shot, the whole way that between the conferences and the students being discussed. It was such, it's one of the best done scenes, I think, in the whole show, in the two seasons, the whole parent-teacher conference bit. It's really well done.
It was really amazing. And, like, that was actually one of my points as well, is, like, the way both Styles and Lydia are both, like, just incredibly smarter than they just put on. And it kind of connects the two in that kind of, like, way they're kind of the same person. Like, they're both really, really smart, but they'd rather be goofy or, like, dumb or, like, not let everyone know how smart they are just for their own reasons. And even though I ship Steric, I still love that between the two of them, and I love that they share that. My notes for the episode, at the very beginning, when Scott and Derek are both on the rooftop, it's like so ridiculously obvious that they're just standing there looking at
everything.
It's not
like a skyscraper. They're like one story up, and they're not like hidden behind anything at all.
And it's not the first time that they've done this, and it's just like, I don't understand. Does no one just choose to look up and notice them? Like, because you don't even have to look at the roof to see the roof in your peripheral vision. Yeah. And it was just really funny. They're just really bad at secrecy on the show. Like, just talking in school, like, flat out about murder, like, being on rooftops.
Yeah,
it's like they don't try
to
hide it at all.
The cops would be, like, scanning the area manically as well if everything was going on.
Like, the killer could totally just be on the rooftop the whole time watching everything, and they wouldn't notice. My second note for the episode was Lydia, like, being so heavily drugged after she saw the monster or the wolf or the alpha or whatever. I feel like she didn't see or was affected enough to be so traumatized by it. She just saw it run out the window, and I feel like Jackson has more of a reason to be like, oh my god, I'm freaking out, because he was almost killed by the thing. Here we are, Jackson's, like, fine, and Lydia is the one who's, like, freaking out and, like, zoning out and just thinking all about what she saw. And I feel like it was a bit over the top. She was just sitting in a car and something ran past her and it didn't even attack her.
It was quite strange. And it makes me wonder if it was the hospital that gave her drugs or if it was, like, her mother, like, slipping her Valium, whatever, if you know what I mean. Because we've seen that her parents are a bit weird. So I don't know, honestly. I mean, different people handle shock differently, and we know that Lydia has a whole certain connection or affectedness by the alpha later on, but I don't know if that's like a chicken or egg situation, whether she was reacting like that because of her connection to the alpha later on, or if it comes because she is so focused on it, if you know what I mean.
I think she got a pretty good glimpse at it, though, because, and this is in the next episode, but when Allison shows her the picture in the book and Lydia's looking at it, she knows what she's seeing and she's freaked out by it. So I think she got a better look at it than we think she did, and maybe that's why she's drugging herself up so much.
Yeah, possibly. And obviously she doesn't have any concept whatsoever that anything weird might be going on. So this is, like, really a big deal. Like, it's not like someone who had a vague idea that such things happened saw it. If you legitimately didn't know anything about all of this and then that sort of happened, it might be different.
Yeah. So it was interesting, to say the least. And speaking of Lydia, that's where in the same kind of scene, that's where my third point is. When Styles just kind of looks at her phone, there are a couple things about that I'm not particularly comfortable with, just because I feel like if it was really clear that she was passed out, or at least to me, it seemed like she was just passed out. So I don't think most people would just go and, like, take someone's phone and check their text messages for them while they're passed out. Mm. Like, I understand he was just, like, trying to help her out. He's like, by the way, you got a text. But then later we see that he has her phone in his room and there's another phone on his laptop. So I thought maybe it's just he sent the text to himself. But that can't be it, because there are two phones in that scene. And so I'm like, did he steal her phone? Like, I don't...
Yeah, that was really strange. I didn't quite... I mean, with the thing in her room, I thought, you know, with Styles, you don't know how much is kind of really calculated or how much is, like, lack of control. Because earlier in the scene, you see him automatically go for the radio when they call... when his the police car that he's in with his dad gets the red alert call, and sort of his dad slaps his hand away and he was like, sorry. So he does seem to have some automatic impulses that aren't calculated and crafty. And I thought that the reading the text might be more like that. Like, it might be more like a product of his lack of control or social skills, if you know what I mean. But as far as stealing the phone goes, I don't know. Maybe he didn't want her to see the video again or something like that. I really don't. And he wasn't sure how to delete it or get rid of it, or whether he needed to get it for himself. It was a bit dodgy, but I don't think it had bad motives.
Yeah, like, he definitely wasn't like, oh, I'm going to steal her phone, ha. But it was like, it was just really interesting.
Yeah, I also found it quite interesting that, this doesn't sound like much, but, like, him kind of not taking advantage of her state and backing off as soon as he realised that she wasn't in her right mind, even though he was so turned on and so kind of like, oh my god, this is happening. there are guys, more guys than you think, that would have happily gone along with whatever she was offering at that point. And he, even though he wants her so badly, didn't. And so that, I thought, was quite cute and showing that he kind of is a really good guy, despite his teenage boy urges.
I know. I love him, because, like, when she, like, passed out on his knee, he was like, oh my god.
Yeah.
It was hysterical.
But then as soon as he realizes, when she does call him back and he's like, no, stay, she does sound a bit more together, and he's like, okay, okay, okay. But as soon as he realizes that she's not with it, he's like, okay, we're done here. And it's really, yeah. I found that really cool.
It's like the second he finds out that, like, she thinks he's Jackson, he's just like, okay, I'm not going to take advantage of that.
And there are people that would have, like, I mean, not, and I don't just mean, like, potential rapists. I mean, like, there are a lot of guys who would have, you know, been much more tempted, potentially. I also wanted to ask, in regards to that point, like, why do you think he did take the phone? Presumably he got it back to her before she noticed, but why do you think he deleted the text rather than saving it, or, you know, sending it to himself and saving it or something like that?
Yeah, you know? Was that sent to her as a text from, like, an anonymous person, or was that a video that she had taken?
I assumed that this was a video that she took accidentally when she was taking pictures of herself with her phone, because she had her phone up when the alpha ran by.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was an actual text, though. I think that the text came in and Styles was saying, like, he didn't know how to use her phone, and then he accidentally pressed something, and maybe just, like, the last thing that she was doing with the camera phone popped up and he saw the video.
Yes.
That makes more sense.
So why do you think that he deleted it, like, without storing it for, you know, proof for other people or whatever? Like, just to protect her from seeing it again, or, you know, to protect the wolves in general? Because I probably would have deleted it from her phone, but tried to rip it into my computer for my werewolf research file or something like that.
Yeah, I would have, like, texted it to myself so that I could show, like, Scott or Derek exactly what this thing looks like and, like, what she saw. But I think she's just trying to both protect Lydia from it, because she can tell that she was, like, really affected by what she saw, and then also just kind of keep the werewolf things down a little bit and, like, just pretend it never happened.
Yeah, I think, you know, half of it is definitely wanting to protect Lydia, and I think the other half is wanting to protect Scott, too. And I think he knows that if it's anywhere out there, you know, whether it's on his phone or his computer, there's a potential that somebody can get to it, see it, question it. And I think, you know, he just doesn't want to take that chance, and that's why he deleted it. I want to go back to really quick to what you guys were talking about, how Styles didn't take advantage of Lydia. And I think that's really telling of how much he cares for her, too, because he wants whatever they potentially could have to be genuine, and he doesn't want to take advantage of her just to be with her. He wants her to feel that way about him, too, and I think that's another reason why he didn't do anything.
Yeah, I think that he is very kind of emotionally mature in a way, and very romantic, and very good at handling his own emotions, which doesn't mean he might not be, he's 16, he might not be very good at handling his downstairs urges, but he seems to be very good at handling his emotions, and that's very sweet. Anyone got anything else for episode The Tell before we go on to the next one?
Nope.
I'm good.
Okay. So we're on to the next episode now, 106, Heart Monitor. The episode opens with Scott being stalked by a werewolf in the parking lot after grocery shopping. He employs some tactics to get away, but then his phone rings, giving him away. He's dragged out of his hiding place, and it turns out that the person stalking him wasn't the Alpha, it was Derek, and this is his idea of training Scott. He says Allison is too much of a distraction and makes Scott basically too happy. He smashes Scott's phone and says that he needs to not be involved in all that, especially before the next full moon, in order to actually get competent. Scott agrees to avoid Allison for a while to focus on control, but lo and behold, the next scene is the pair making out in Allison's bed. Allison hides Scott in the closet when Kate knocks on the door, and Kate comes in and drops a few more hints to Allison about their family's past. When Scott sneaks out of Allison's house, he's accosted by the Alpha, who doesn't attack but draws a spiral in the mist on Scott's car window. When Derek is waiting in Scott's bedroom at home to tell him off about going to see Allison, Scott tries to get Derek to tell him the meaning of the spiral. Derek refuses, eventually saying, "You don't want to know," in a sort of semi-comforting, shoulder-paddish way. Derek later goes to visit his Uncle Peter in the nursing home, begging him for information or even a response at all, till Peter's nurse throws him out for getting too aggressive about things. And as he leaves, we see Peter start to move his hand in response to what Derek was saying when begging him to lift a finger. At school, Scott's trying to avoid Allison, Jackson, and other people who may distract him. Styles isn't talking to him because he's mad Scott wasn't there to protect people at the parent-teacher conference when the sheriff got hurt in the parking lot and Chris Argent shot the mountain lion. Scott admits that he's gone to Derek for help figuring things out, and while Styles is still angry, his curiosity wins out and asks Scott what's been said by Derek. When Scott explains about using anger and gaining control, and that Derek said he isn't sure if he can teach Scott because he's a bitten werewolf, not a born one, Styles decides to help himself and also get some revenge on Scott while helping by tying Scott's hands behind his back, monitoring his heart rate while pelting him with lacrosse balls. Jackson watches this secretly, laughing at them until he starts to notice things getting weird, and he's once again back to his curiosity about Scott's secret. After having some hallucinations due to his festering werewolf wound, Jackson starts to set up a plan to get close to Scott via being friends with Allison. Later, after Coach Finstock yells at Scott in class for being so behind in his homework, Scott starts to lose control and is brought back by Allison holding his hand. Styles realizes that Allison's comfort could be an anchor for Scott, so he tries another exercise, keying the truck of some thugs outside the school and blaming it on Scott, and then encouraging Scott to pick out Allison's voice in the school while he takes the beating. This seems to work, and Scott soon heals from his beating up. And when the boys get detention for this, Scott tells Styles he knows that Styles was punishing by having him beaten up. Styles says that he's not actually mad at Scott, but that because Scott can do things no one else can do, means he no longer has a choice about using those powers to help others, and that he wasn't there to do it. At the conference, he needs to take responsibility now. Derek goes to see Scott's boss, the vet, who he seems to suspect is the Alpha. The vet is cagey and avoidant with answers about all the things that have been happening, like the spiral and the animal attacks, and he seems to know more about it than he's saying. Scott arrives at work to find Derek questioning the vet by beating him up, and he puts a stop to it, exerting his own wolf strength that he's managed to hone a little bit, grabbing Derek and stopping him. Derek explains what the spiral means, finally, that it's a werewolf symbol for revenge, and that he knows the vet's lying about what he knows. Scott tries to prove that the vet's not the Alpha by having them all meet at the school, where he tries to summon the real Alpha by howling through the PA system while Derek supervises the vet. The Alpha does appear, and Scott's boss disappears. When Scott asks what happens, Derek gets stabbed by the Alpha's claws, falls down apparently dead, and Scott and Styles run terrified into the school and barricade themselves in. And then this is the end of the episode, which turns into a full-on two-parter in 107, which we'll be doing next episode of Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. So that was a bit of a cliffhanger ending on that one. So before we get too far into it, we'll do our quotes first of all.
So I have three, actually. They're all between Scott and Styles. I just love that relationship so much. But when Styles takes Scott to the field to throw those balls at him, he hands him the heart monitor and he's like, "I'm like the Incredible Hulk." And Styles is like, "Will you shut up and put that thing on?" Like he was like so happy and was like really nerdy about like, "Oh, I'm like the Hulk." It was so cute.
I liked that, and it was a real juxtaposition to the scene where Styles is advising Scott and Scott's like, sorry, Styles is like, "I'm a way better Yoda than Derek," and Scott's like, "Yeah, whatever." And he's like, "No, I'm a better Yoda than Derek." And he tries to make Scott admit that he's Yoda in the same way that Scott was trying to make him admit that he was like the Hulk. So yeah. I found that comparison really funny.
Oh, man. I love Styles so much. I can't get over Styles. I just can't. And the next quote I love is when Scott's just like, something smells terrible in here anyway. And Styles is like, really? In a boy's locker room? Doesn't make sense at all.
His facial expression was great there.
Oh, yeah. His facial expressions for, like, everything he says is just perfect. Dylan O'Brien is such a fantastic comedic actor.
There was, I can't remember exactly where I heard this from. It might have been the Comic-Con panel or something, but Jeff Davis was saying that Tyler Posey is very communicative with his eyes. So they do a lot of close-up shots with Tyler Posey in the show, and they have to do medium shots with Dylan O'Brien because he's so physical when he acts and he like throws his head all around. And there was, yeah, I'm pretty sure it was the Comic-Con panel because Tyler did an impression of him, which was hilarious. But I always think about that now and the way he moves his body, for the comedy and everything.
He uses, even when it's not particularly comedic, even when it's dramatic as well, he uses his torso a lot. He uses his arms, like his arm and hand movements. Like he'll throw his sort of arm back or his shoulders back rather than just the face. I mean, when he does want to pull just the face, he can, but he really does. And this episode in particular had a lot of really, really good physical style stuff. Yeah, a lot of different really, really good physical reactions, like when he keys the truck. And his sort of reaction to Scott, his reactions to Scott being beaten up when he's keyed the truck, and also the look he gives Derek when he has the vet in the back of his car with the gaffer tape over his mouth. He's just like, it's amazing. But yeah, there was quite a lot in this episode of Styles' physicality being used really, really, really well.
My last favorite quote is when they're talking about how Scott has to avoid Allison and just stop thinking about her. And like, they're talking about how Scott is always, like, just a hormonal teenager, and he always thinks about sex. And then he's like, you're thinking about sex right now, aren't you? And Scott's like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
And I like how Styles is just like, okay, whatever, like, kind of thing.
Yeah.
I know. It's amazing.
I love this scene because it shows you how mature Styles is, even though everybody obviously assumes with his ADD and the way he acts is that he's this really immature guy. But, I mean, he knows when to focus. And it just really, to me, showed the difference in maturity level between Scott and Styles here.
Well, this was actually the bit that I was mentioning in the last recap, which was that he seems really emotionally mature because and it sort of ties back into what I've mentioned before about how whether Styles is just really good socially from instinct or if he is, you know, has had mature past experiences. Because he's so chill. Like, Scott is so hopped up all of the time, and Styles is so chill, and he's really good at taking a lot of emotional things in stride. Like, that whole scene ends with, you know, they're talking about the sex stuff, and Styles is like, no, it's different. Like, it's different to, you know, when you're, you know, being hormonal, whatever, Allison is, you know, an anchor, when it's the comforting and calm thing. And Scott's like, oh, because I love her, right? And Styles like, yeah, whatever, you know, because you love her. But he's not even dismissive about it. He's just like, yeah, that's cool. Like, he's kind of really chill about it and almost sort of fatherly. He's really, really, really good at taking emotional things maturely. And I find that very interesting and where that came from. Very, very interesting. Like, where does that come from?
I don't know. I kind of wonder if part of it is because, you know, we don't know exactly when Styles lost his mother, but I think, you know, he had to grow up fairly quickly. Mm. And I know sons and fathers are very close, but there's always something with, you know, mothers and everything like that. And I just wonder if her loss made Styles just become a man a little bit sooner than everybody else.
Yeah. He just has no shame in admitting his emotions in so many ways, and I find that really interesting, and in a mature way, in a like, yeah, a proper adult man is in touch with his emotions, and it's fine, and you don't have to make a big deal of it kind of thing. And that whole scene going from like the sex stuff to the love stuff was a really, really good example of that.
So I had two favorite lines. The first one was when they're in the economics class with Coach, and Coach asks Scott, are you familiar with the term sarcasm, McCall? And Scott just says, very. And then Styles' face right there. He's just got this super proud look on his face. And I just love it.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, he's just like looking at him like, yes, He's learned totally well.
I have that GIF in my folder and I use it all the time. I just love it.
My second one, too, was this was actually a fairly serious one, and it's something that Styles says to Scott when they're in detention. And Styles says, "You have something, Scott. Whether you want it or not, you can do things no one else can do. That means you don't have a choice anymore. You have to do something." And Natalie and I seem to be on the same wavelength here, and we're thinking Spider-Man with with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah, I've just put this note next to her quote saying Spider-Man in brackets. Yeah, because it's very much like that.
It's the first thing I thought of, too, and that's everything that I've been saying up until this point, where I just want Scott to realize, you know, that he has this power to go out and do things and save people and, you know, change the world if he wants to. And he needs to do it because he has the ability to do it.
Mm. That just reminds me of, I don't know why, but it reminds me of Princess Diaries when Lily is, like, explaining how, like, she wants to change the world and she doesn't have a voice to do it and, like, Mia is like a princess and she has the ability to. And like, I just love that parallel.
Yeah.
Like, I just love that there's always like a character who has the ability to do something. And then there's the best friend who really can't do anything. Mm. And I love that in every single storyline that has it, because it's so true and it's so awesome.
Yeah.
Sorry for the random Princess Diaries.
Mine, I had a couple as well. I liked when Scott was kind of having this breakdown about how he couldn't, you know, he finally realizes, oh, after his lacrosse, you know, after Styles is throwing the lacrosse balls at him, he's like, oh, I really can't be around Allison. And Styles is like, why? Because she makes you happy? And Scott's like, no, because she makes me weak. And then later, Styles is like, look, you know, this whole women makes you weak thing is a little too Spartan warrior for me. And he kind of, and I was just like, yeah, go feminist Styles, because he seemed to, you know, he seemed to think this was such a stupid concept that this was happening, and that, you know, it was something that he was sure Scott would get over. And I just liked the phrasing and the implications of that. And then the other one was one of my favorite moments, when they go into the school and Scott does the terrible, first of all, he does the really, really bad first howl through the PA system, and which is just shocking. Two things about that. Styles saying that it sounded like a cat being choked or whatever, and Derek's face when he's outside and he hears the first terrible howl, and he just kind of closes his eyes and is just like, you've got to be kidding me. But it's so funny. Derek is a lot more subtle than Styles. Obviously, he doesn't throw his body around, but a lot of his matter-of-fact deliveries and facial expressions I'm finding hysterical on the rewatch. But the real clincher was when they come out and Scott says, oh, I didn't know it would be so loud. And Styles is like, yeah, it was loud and it was awesome. And Derek just looks at him and goes, shut up. But it's not even vicious. It's just like, it's this example of Derek not knowing how to handle a person that acts like this. Like, that he hasn't had to deal with someone who's so kind of full of life and humor and things like that in a long time. Like, he's dealing with Scott, but it's all very, you know, traumatic and intense. And it's a very kind of desperate, like, shut up, I don't know how to deal with you. And then Styles quips back to him, oh, don't be such a sour wolf, which was an ad-lib on the part of Dylan O'Brien. I know for a fact that he made that up, and it has become, like, one of the most favorite things in all of fandom, that line. So, yeah, I do like that moment.
I really love how, like, every single one of us had a favorite line, if at least one of them was from Styles. Like, for both.
Oh, that happens to we often struggle to do, like, non-Styles lines.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, we
I
should
have
do-
to go, okay.
Yeah.
One from Styles, one from somebody else. Yeah. I know I can do it.
But
it's funny, though, because this show, I was thinking about this, this show is so quotable. Mm. There are so many great one-liners in just about every scene. I really love that about it.
There's a couple of really good lines that I found, like, they were a bit more serious, which I'll actually talk about in my discussion, because they're actually not, like, a quote. They're just really good writing that aren't from Styles. But we'll get to that in the discussion.
So my discussion points, I think it was towards the beginning, I'm not exactly sure where this came up, but when Scott and Styles are talking about werewolf stuff in school, and, like, I know you guys already talked about it on previous podcasts, but, like, they really need to work on whispering, because, like, just it's so bad. The way, like, they're talking so loudly in school, like, in class, and then when they get in the hallway, they're like, yeah, you would have killed me. And I'm like, do you really talk about murder in the middle of, like, a crowded hallway?
I don't know how
how they're going to get away with doing it any other way, because they have to have them talk somewhere, and the school is pretty much their only set, so, like, I don't know what else they're going to do, but it, yeah, it is always a bit ridiculous.
It's so hysterical, just the way every single time it happens, I'm like, oh, man. The second point I have is when Scott and Stiles are practicing trying to keep Scott calm, and, like, he keeps throwing balls at his face. sorry, I just got really immature right there. But when that happens, like, I thought Payne kept Scott human. And so when he was hitting him with all the, like, baseballs or whatever they were, like, you think, yeah, he'd get mad, but because of the pain, wouldn't it also, like, just cancel it out? Or, well, like, do you think it was only hurting a little bit, so, it, like, he's more angry about it than anything?
Well, I think that's the whole point. I mean, this is one of my discussion points, which will come up about the anchors for different people. Derek says that pain is the anchor, but that's Derek's anchor. It's not Scott's, and that's what they discover, like, through that, because Stiles stops the exercise when he realizes, oh, shit, this isn't working. You know, I thought this would work. Derek said that, you know, if, you know, he's in pain, sort of, he... I'm assuming it only hurt, you know, mildly. It wasn't like Derek breaking his arm or whatever, but the pain was making him angry enough to potentially start to change and then change back. But what we discover through the whole thing is that this isn't actually the thing for Scott, and that they find out that, you know, focusing on Allison is better or whatever. But I do have an extended point around that whole anchor thing, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, it was really interesting, but we'll save that for, like, when for your discussion points. But also another point that I had was about Jackson, actually. When he approached Allison in the middle of the hallway, he was just being really, really, really creepy about it. Like, he walks up to her and stands there for a good 2 seconds before he says hi. He scares the crap out of her. And then he just stares at her for, like, a long time. And she's just like, do you need something? That is not the right way to get on her good side.
No.
I don't understand that.
That scene makes me really uncomfortable. I do not like Jackson in
that
scene.
I don't think he knows how to do friendship. Like, I don't think he knows how to do life properly. but yeah, I was just like, does he think he's being... Like, when he sat down and was like, he doesn't know how to not talk threateningly. Does he think he's being emotionally moving or something? Because the way that he sat down and was like, do you know what it's like to be the best and have that taken away from you? Yeah, it's like you're a 4-year-old spoiled brat. That's what it's like. And you're managing to say it in this really aggressive, threatening way. So I don't really understand what you think you're achieving. But it, and even Allison was like, you are an idiot, the way that he was talking. So, yeah.
He's trying so hard to be genuine, and I don't think he knows how to do that. I mean, everything he says is so manipulative and just crass, and he's trying to be genuine, and he can't. He just fails at it.
Yeah. And I mean, if those things are his honest feelings about the, you know, being the best and having that taken away, I'm just like, if this is your genuine feelings, you probably need some therapy, which is probably true. You know, if he thinks this is like what open share time is, then I think he has a bit of a lack of a grasp on normal emotions and what's cool to go share with your friends about, and, you know, what's a normal response to have to things, and one that doesn't make people look at you like you are insane.
Yeah, maybe I think Danny is the only person he could probably talk to without looking like a creeper.
Yeah.
But my last point for the episode is when Scott gets beaten up for quote-unquote keying the car. That was really, really, really intense. Like, the way they were, like, kicking him really, really hard and, like, just kicking the crap out of him. I felt like it was a little too intense for a group of high school kids. Plus the fact that that group of guys all looked like they were 20-something.
Yeah, I think they were. I know it was outside school, but I don't think that they were meant to be other students. Like, they did look too old, and I don't think we were meant to think they were students. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and it felt like they were intentionally trying to, like, kill him. Like, that's how hard they were going at it. Mm. Instead of, like, you know, like, there's a difference between, like, hitting someone to, like, yeah, you know? So that was a little weird for me.
Yeah, that whole scene was kind of strange because they were standing, like, 10 feet away and they didn't notice that Stiles keep the truck.
Right?
I mean, I don't know. We just have to suspend our disbelief a little bit there, I guess.
I mean, obviously Stiles knew that Scott would heal, and he says that later. He's like, you know, oh, you know, you let that happen because you know I would heal. And it's like, yeah, like, that's no revelation here. I mean, again, it was clearly Stiles getting out his anger and revenge on Scott without laying a hand on him himself. I actually find Stiles' vindictiveness somewhat
hilarious. Like, there's a bit more of that that comes up when Styles is angry. He's pretty vicious, and I think he has the potential for a lot of anger, and that he's more ruthless than Scott. He just doesn't have the power to back it up, if you know what I mean. And I think that if he went dark, or if something crosses him, if something really bad happens, I think that he could pull some stuff out that would be really quite scary.
I just had a couple here, and I don't know why. Okay, I'm like obsessed with this whole Greenberg thing, and I can't help it. I'm sorry. But like, okay, so we hear Coach say to Greenberg, put your hand down, Greenberg. We all know you did the reading. And then I rewound this 3 times, you guys.
The only person that has their hand up that you see is a girl.
Well, no, there's a girl, and then there's a guy behind her.
Yeah, I saw the guy.
Saw the girl in purple, and I was like, so we know Greenberg's a nerd, and he does his economics homework. Clearly, he really wants to please Coach. He really wants Coach to love him. He's got so much so insecurity. Badly. Like, he just needs the acceptance of Coach.
Yeah. So that was my Greenberg watch for the episode. But anyway, real point. One of my favorite scenes in this season overall was when Allison and Scott were in that same class, actually, and, you know, Coach is yelling at him and being really vicious. I was, like, so surprised by everything that he said. And we can tell from the heart monitor that Styles has that Scott's heart rate is going up pretty high, and he's, you know, worried about what's going to happen. And then Allison just takes Scott's hand, and his heart rate starts coming down. I love that scene. It's so beautiful. And I love that instead of the girl being, to go back to what we were saying before, like the girl being the kryptonite, you know, she's actually making him stronger and helping to ground him back into being a human.
It's kind of like the more appropriate and like this actually works compared to Rumpel from Once Upon a Time, like Rumpelstiltskin and Belle, like it's kind of like that, except this relationship actually works. Like the for those who don't watch Once Upon a Time, Rumpelstiltskin is in love with Belle, and Belle loves Rumpel, but he's always this evil guy who always tries to do magic, and he's always working on like these evil things, and the girl's trying to talk him out of it and calm him down and make sure that he's not a monster. And like she tries to be his anchor, and it works to some extent, but not all the way. But in this show, it totally is. Like, she is his anchor, and she like really helps Scott just calm down. And like, I love that parallel between the two. And it's you're totally right.
I didn't think about that before, but yeah, that's a great comparison.
I mean, this can tie into what I was going to get into with Derek, in that we have Derek being, at the beginning of the episode, Derek says, like, this is the only way that I can teach you, in regards to kind of pain bringing you back and anger, you know, enforcing your power. But Scott was calmed by Allison, and later one of the other wolves uses positive memories as well as his anchor. So it's clearly a Derek thing that, you know, it is the only way he can teach, because his anchor is so negative. And I'm just like, oh, you poor baby, about Derek in regards to that, because I'm just a sucker. But yeah, I mean, we don't know too much about the various control methods, but we have two more inexperienced werewolves than Derek who both have this non-pain anger-based stuff that they are a bit more zen in regards to what they use for control. And Derek is so, he's like wearing a hair shirt and whipping himself, like, you know, like a pilgrimage Christian. Like, he's just, and I just wonder what his powers would be like and what his control would be like and how he would develop if he wasn't focused on the pain and anger. I mean, he's so, Tariq, you've watched Avatar, right? Or only Korra?
I have not watched either, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, that won't make any sense to anyone. He's so like Zuko. He's so like, to anyone who's listening, he's so much like Zuko in the first couple of seasons, and he needs to have the same development Zuko has in regards to Zuko's firebending. He needs to find a different way to use his powers. And there's a whole plot point where he had a certain drive that forced his powers. When he lost that drive, he actually lost pretty much all of his powers, but then he found a new and more healthy way to use that. And I would find it really interesting if Derek had a similar thing happen, seeing as both Scott and Isaac, the other werewolf, have a more positive way of control.
And then my last point's just about the chem teacher. And I, rewatching this and really paying attention to this scene in particular, I was kind of confused. So I just kind of want to get your guys' take on this. But they were in detention after the chem teacher broke up the fight between the guys who were beating up on Scott. He put Stiles and Scott in detention and wouldn't let them go, even though Scott had work. He didn't really care. Then Scott and Stiles talk out their feelings or whatever, and, you know, Stiles admits that he doesn't hate Scott or anything like that. He was just upset, but he's fine now. And literally right after this, the chem teacher says, okay, you can go. First of all, he was obviously listening to their conversation and had to be a little confused when Scott said, you knew I was going to heal, right? And then after that, you know, letting them go after, you know, so what was his angle? Did he just want them to make up and then, you know, be fine with it? Or does he know what's going on? I was really confused.
Well, I know that a lot of people that I've seen who are watching it for the first time at this point in the show had him as a suspect for the Alpha, that they thought the vet was too obvious, and that it was that the suspects were the vet, Peter Hale, and the chem teacher. And I thought it might have been something to do with that, like to be that he like kind of knew what they were talking about and he approved of what Scott was saying from the perspective of being the Alpha, if you know what I mean, and that you're maybe meant to think that.
I hate the chem teacher so much.
He's pretty gross. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point in the show, the first time you watched it, by the end of this episode, who did you suspect was the Alpha?
The vet.
I actually thought it was the vet as well. Just because the way he escapes from the car at the end of this episode.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know. Did we ever confirm later in the season how he escaped? Because that just confused me. So I think that was like just the clear-cut way to be like, oh, it's him, obviously. Because you get to see a bunch of people, actually, in this episode who you think are the Alpha,
well,
and
yeah,
only one of them is the Alpha.
Yeah, that was the whole thing. So, yeah.
But it's so hard, because the way they make it happen, or the way they show it, really, really makes you think that it's the vet and not who it actually is.
Yeah. I don't know, because, yeah, I just know that when people were watching it, that they thought that that you're meant to think it was the vet, but that it was the chem teacher. So that's what I sort of took from that. Him letting them go. Or maybe he wasn't paying attention. He was just like, right, they've been here long enough or something like that. I don't know, honestly. But yeah. Mine were, first of all, what did you guys think of Kate's further encouragement in regards to Allison researching her family history and obviously trying to clue in Allison as much as possible so she starts asking the questions herself or realizing things about Beacon Hills or Scott or whatever? If you were in Kate's position, do you think this is the right way to do it, or would you just tell her outright, or would you make Chris tell her, or whatever?
I don't like how she's going about this. I think that regardless of how she feels about what Allison should know and, you know, where she should be at in her training or whatever, it's not her place to decide this, and I think that it's dangerous for Allison. I mean, it's dangerous for Allison to not know, but it's also dangerous for her to know. And that's a lot of pressure, and it's very heady. You know, it's a lot to take in. And that should be something that her parents should clue her in on. And even though Kate is a hunter and she is family, I don't think it's her place to be doing this.
I think she has a right to some regards, because they can't really go on, especially with all of like recent revelations that the town has been going through, without Allison knowing. Her father trained her to be a crossbow like shooter. So like clearly he's like training her to know at some point, and she's really good at doing archery. So I think that he was going to tell her at some point, and now that she's actually been really, really good at this, like they have to tell her soon. Otherwise things could get really nasty if she's unprepared. And I think that Kate is just like, well, I'm going to tell her if you aren't, because she needs to know. And her father is just taking too long. I mean, granted, I think it could have been a little more obvious about it instead of like hinting at it and just like, yeah, go look for it, you know?
But I feel a bit like the way Kate was doing it was kind of setting her against Chris, in the sense that she maybe wants to get Allison to be playing by Kate's rules a bit more than she wants her to be playing by Chris's rules. And so she wants to be the one that makes Allison feel betrayed by Chris. And, you know, saying, I was letting you in on it. Your dad didn't want to.
be on my side, let me train you to be like me. And obviously that's not something that we want.
Yeah, and I think we get a bigger sense of that later on in the season, but I definitely agree with that.
The next bit I liked was Derek, when he comes to lurk in Scott's room, which is just, you know, clearly he's a balanced individual. He just
so
shows
creepy.
Up. It's really funny, but it is kind of creepy. Like, and the fact that he just does it so often, it's just like, a part of my inner heart is like, he just wants to be in a normal house for once. But, aww. You know, does Derek even have a cell phone? I mean, I know he smashed Scott's, but whatever. Regardless, Scott makes a very, very good point when he's asking him about the spiral. He says, you can't ask me to trust you and then keep things to yourself, which I think is a big step forward from, like, the rant I was screaming about last episode. Because that's really, really one of the big problems here. And that's definitely Scott taking a step forward on his side, because that was a huge issue in that Derek seems to want these things. He seems to want this, you know, support and partnership, but he wasn't sharing what he knows. And even the way that Scott kind of keeps pushing about the spiral, and the way that he says to him at the end, he's like, you don't want to know, and he kind of puts his hand on his shoulder. I thought that interaction was like a big step forward for them.
I love the way that Derek just keeps sneaking into people's rooms. just like that's how he gets their attention. He doesn't call them up, or he doesn't be like, hey, we need to talk. He's just like, I'm going to be in your room right now. And he just waits for them.
I mean, I can't wait for the moment that he gets properly called out on it. I mean, there's been lots of times, especially with Styles, where he's like, you can't just do that, and like falls over his chair or whatever. But I really want there to be like an episode where they're like, Derek, you're 22 years old. Get an apartment and a cell phone. And just call me and ask if you need some help, instead of showing up in my room and demanding like a sexual predator. Like, you know what I mean? I really want there to be like a Derek intervention at some point, like in a humorous manner about like him, even if it's done by like the rest of his pack, like next season, even if it's not Scott and Styles, even if it's Erica and stuff, if they're like, dude, come on. Yes, we're going to be a pack, but life is fun too. Let's hang out, go bowling, order some pizza and get you an apartment kind of thing. I really want that to happen.
Oh man, I feel I was going to mention this when we brought up his house in the last discussion, but I feel like he should make the Argents rebuild his house, just because they burnt it down. And like at some point, like without getting too spoilery, I mean, like there isn't bad blood between the Archers and Derek for forever, or like at least not as terrible as like, I'm gonna kill you every time I see you. So like he can totally use it to his advantage and be like, hey, can you rebuild my house, because I need a place to sleep that doesn't rain on me,
like human to human rebuild my house kind of thing. Well, this is maybe if Derek had sued, you know, when they smashed in his car window, that could have been worked out in the settlement, but
right,
you know,
exactly. Like that was just completely pointless.
But yeah, in regards to the Scott and Derek relationship moving forward, I did like that. Asking the right questions there, Scott, for once. The other thing about Styles that I wanted to say, I think this is the last point I had, was that the interaction where they're at lunch and, you know, Styles is offering to be Scott's Yoda and they're kind of talking again. And Scott says, so does this mean you don't hate me anymore? And Styles says, no, but your crap has infiltrated my life, so now I have to do something about it. That whole issue with Styles being involved in general is something that I feel pretty strongly about, and I just wanted to know what you guys thought about him saying that. I mean, obviously he doesn't hate Scott, you know, when Scott says, oh, so does this mean you don't hate me? And he's like, no, obviously he doesn't hate Scott, but that whole thing that your problems have infiltrated my life and now I have to do something about it. I thought it was very much like him taking that Spider-Man concept in hand even before Scott does, like, I know what's going on, so I have to do something about it even though I don't have the power. And his frustration with Scott not doing something about it even though he does have the power is very understandable. But Styles being wrapped up in this world and feeling so obligated even though he has no power and no control, what do you think about that?
I think Styles is just a fantastic friend. I mean, above and beyond. Because think about it, if your best friend literally turns into a werewolf, 99% of people are going to totally freak out. Mm. And Styles is just there with him every step of the way. And like you said, he has the ability to help Scott, so he knows that, you know, he's got to. But yeah, he's just an incredible friend.
My whole thing is like, you can talk about, like, what makes a hero or what bravery really is. And to me, bravery isn't something that, like, people going ahead and doing things brashly and not being scared of doing them, either because they know they've got the power to handle it or just because they're not afraid of it. To me, that's not really strength or bravery. That's just, I mean, not stupidity, but it's, they're not risking anything. But, and I think like real bravery and heroics is people who really have no power and put themselves forward anyway. And so to me, because of that, like Styles is the biggest hero, like on the show. The way that he said that like your crap's infiltrated my life and now I have to do something about it is just really representative of that. And it's such, yeah, strong impression of that.
I love the way that he does do something about it. Like he tries to help him out as much as possible. And I had a question for you guys. Like the past couple of times I've been listening to the podcast and this question keeps popping up in my mind. But like, do you guys think that he is going to get some sort of like supernatural help or anything at some point in the show?
Yeah.
Like maybe not this season, but like, do you think he's not maybe a werewolf? Maybe I don't know, but like, I feel like they can go a lot of different ways with this, but do you think he's eventually going to get supernatural abilities?
Yeah, I don't think that he's going to become a werewolf ever, but I think that he potentially will be trained as a kind of werewolf watcher type person by either the vet or the guidance counselor, who both clearly know about werewolves. Jeff Davis has said that Styles isn't magic, but that Mountain Ash is magic, and so Styles was able to use the magic product. And I think that he will probably build more defenses in things that he can use that will give him power, like learning magic. Not that he is inherently magic, but that learning to use, kind of like in Buffy, yes, like with Willow and Tara, like it doesn't seem like anyone has to have innate power to be a witch, that you can develop what you can do from doing things that is magic that will work for anyone who tries the right spell, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
So I think that will happen to him, that he will do that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. Like I keep making parallels to Once Upon a Time and stuff, but it's exactly like Once Upon a Time, where like you can learn magic and you're not necessarily born with it.
It's not, yeah, you don't point your finger and shoot lightning, but you can learn to use things that are magic. And I think that might be a plot point for Styles.
I really look forward to that.
I love the comparison that you made between the Buffy thing with the Watcher, and I think like I would really like to see Styles stay completely human. I think that there's a lot of power in that, and a lot of people can relate to Styles because he is so human. I really want to see his power come from his knowledge, like you said with the Watcher. Like he learns from the vet or he learns from other people, and he builds this whole thing with the knowledge that he has about werewolves and everything, and that's how he helps Scott. I'd really like to see that, I think, above everything else.
I mean, I hope if he's going to run around with them, though, I hope they give him a taser or a few more Molotov cocktails or something, though. Like, I think that he will build an arsenal to be able to defend himself and other people, regardless of whether that's Mountain Ash or magic product or whether that's, like, a taser or something like that, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely.
Like, I think that he will learn, he will become a little less fragile at some point.
I think he and Lydia are going to make a fantastic team, because as people will see in the next episode, Lydia knows what to do with chemicals and like knows what to do with this stuff. And so like, I feel like Lydia is going to be the one to help him create like all this like arsenal stuff, and he's going to be the one to use it while all the other werewolves are doing their werewolf things.
Mm.
It's actually kind of comparable too to Phoebe from Charmed, because she had that practice. And she had to learn, you know, martial arts and everything, and I wouldn't mind seeing Styles be able to handle himself in that way.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I love you for mentioning Charmed. My favorite
Karen's
show
obsessed
ever.
With Charmed.
Oh, it's my favorite show in the world, and it totally makes sense. Absolutely. Yeah. Heck yeah. Except Phoebe has a little bit of a witchy help when she does do her acrobatics. Acrobatics? That's not what it, you know what I mean.
So that's the wrap-up for episode 106, which was Heart Monitor, and we were left on a bit of a cliffhanger, so next week we'll do 107 when the boys are still trapped inside the school and Derek is apparently dead. Spoiler, he's not. He is in the rest of the season and the next season. But whatever. Episode without Derek.
I'm really excited about the next episode. It's one of my favorite ones. I was so sad that we had to stop.
Yeah, I was when I realized, I'm like, oh my god, we're going to stop in the middle of the two-parter. Oh, good. All right. Should have planned that better, but oh well.
It has some of my favorite scenes in the next episode, just and my lines from Styles, just everything. Mm. So all those listeners who haven't watched it, you're going to love it.
All right. right, we're going to move into the news section really quick and go over some of the biggest stories from these last couple of weeks. The first one comes from Jeff Davis doing a Twitter Q&A, and he gave us some fairly small points about what we can expect in Season 3, but they're interesting enough, and there's enough of them that we decided to bring them up here, and I wrote a post on hypeable.com if you want to check it out over there. But some of the things that he mentioned is that Lydia is going to have an older sister that we'll be seeing next season. Danny might get a new boyfriend, which I'm actually really excited about. I think that'll be cool. We might get some more information on Styles' mother, and Styles' long-term plan with Lydia is not necessarily over, so all you guys that want to see them together, that might still come at hand. Matt is really dead, which makes me kind of sad because I love Stephen Lunsford, and I was kind of sad to hear this. Although, I mean, it's good that he is, because how they could bring him back in a logical way, I don't really see that coming. So I mean, it's probably for that.
If he is working on the siege, then there may be some sort of flashback, but like an Allison flashback or a Lydia flashback. But I don't think he's going to come back from drowning.
And I love that. I love that they do that, because you can't really bring too many characters.
I know. This is what we were saying. We're like, are we really going to reincarnate everyone? Like,
yeah.
You know, this isn't Marvel or something, you know? Like, we can't, you know.
And then filming starts on December 3rd, so that's coming up in a couple of weeks, which we're really excited about. And, of course, anything that comes out of that, we'll be posting it on hypeable.com, so make sure you guys stay on top of that, and I'll get it out as soon as possible, and we'll keep on top of that. Mm-hmm. And this last point is something that I definitely wanted to ask you guys. The question to Jeff was if humans count as pack members, and Jeff responded that he couldn't answer that because it goes back into spoiler territory.
Yeah, he says, good question, can't answer.
And I mean, okay, a little obvious, but I wanted to ask you guys what significance you think this would have.
I think that this is going to be a plot point, obviously. Like, maybe the Alpha Pack will be, like, mocking Scott or Derek's pack for, you know, running with humans. Or that it's going to be a plot point about Derek's family, because not all of them were werewolves, but they were the Hale Pack or whatever. Yeah, the plot point is going to involve whether they do count or not, obviously. I personally am going to place money on saying that they do. And I think that that's going to be a thing. And it might not be like that they don't have to be controlled by the Alpha in the way that the Betas sort of are, that they're not like animalistically controlled, but that they will, to other werewolves, like smell and show allegiance as to being part of that person's pack, if you know what I mean. Or that they will create a new precedent for it, either in regards to Scott trying to form his little ragtag pack, or in regards to maybe, you know, Scott coming in with Derek and the others, you know, maybe the Alpha Pack terrorizing style, also Lydia, and them being like, no, they're pack in some ways.
It could go either way, really, you know? There's some things where, like, I can totally imagine, and, like, just, I don't have any opinion about this because I don't know.
I just feel pretty strongly about it because Derek's family wasn't all werewolves. And so I feel like that had to count for something in regards to the human and werewolf interaction.
Yeah, I agree with you, Natalie, because, I mean, what is a pack? It's just, you know, a group of people that look out for each other, they're connected to each other, they're friends, they're family, you know, they're close. And why can't a werewolf and a human, you know, have that same sort of connection, even if they're not all on the same level as far as ability goes? I still think that they could be pack members.
And I mean, obviously we have the Alpha and Beta control situation where they, like, the Alpha is able to actually mentally force them to obey or whatever, which I doubt that they'd have with the humans, which might make the dynamic kind of funny or whatever. But yeah, I do think that it is going to be something that they do, maybe something that the Alpha Pack doesn't accept, but that Derek or Scott does accept, because, as I said, Derek's family, and obviously pretty much all Scott's friends are human, and he doesn't really like the whole werewolf thing.
The next story is actually a pretty big one, considering that it's about somebody's hair, but this sort of blew up, and I don't even know if Jeff Davis realized how big it was,
oh my
big
God.
Of a deal it was going to be, but the whole thing started out as Jeff Davis asked Dylan O'Brien, the actor who plays Styles, to keep his hair longer for the next season, not like down to his shoulders or anything, just a little bit longer.
The way it's grown out over the summer, which is kind of like a few inches long and kind of spiked up and kind of cool, nice, tussled boy hair.
Yeah. And we know that Styles has his buzz cut. That's sort of his thing there. And Jeff Davis wanted him to keep it a little bit long for the next season, but Dylan had a good question. Why? What's the reason behind Styles wanting to grow his hair out? So Jeff took to Twitter to ask for our help. He needed a few good reasons as to why Styles would want to keep his hair long. And people were tweeting at him and giving him some reasons, and you know, there was a lot written about it and everything. And we put up a poll on Hypeable, and this was great. We got 4,278 votes on the poll, and there were three options. Either one works for me, long and short. I'm not even kidding you. I'm looking at the poll right now. 1,825 people voted for long, and 1,825 people voted for short.
Oh, you guys.
That's so crazy.
Insane. And it's so funny how divided people are. And the post has 86 comments, and people are just, they're so split on this. So I need to know, you know, for you guys, what did you vote for and what are your reasons behind it?
So I voted for short because I like him with short hair just for that reason, really. But I can totally see him growing it out long. And the thing is, I said this on the article, I'm fine with it either way, even though I'd prefer it short. But if he does it long, he should be just because he wants to have more hair, because he's around a whole bunch of werewolves and he can't grow a beard. So maybe having more hair will make him feel like a man.
I put short, I think, and I might have voted for it as long on another computer, I can't remember. I have some conflicting feelings about this because I think it looks fantastic. I think over the summer Dylan has looked really good with his hair long. But I really respect his thought processes as an actor because he seems to be very, very, very serious and very, very professional in regards to that kind of thing. And for him to ask that question, like, why would I do that? I don't understand why Styles would do that. Really is something that you should think about in the sense of, you know, it does have to be a good character-driven reason. And there are a few situations where I'd be okay with it and a few that I wouldn't. But then on the other hand, I know that Dylan as well is a very kind of, aside from being a very professional guy, he's pretty chill and down to earth, and he's got a lot of respect for his character. And I feel like there's a lot of people saying, oh, keep it long because he's so much cuter like that. And I feel like he's not into that. I feel like from the amount of media that I've consumed with him in it, he's kind of not really into the idea of doing it to make Styles cuter or to make himself cuter or to be the hot one, if you know what I mean, on the show. Yeah. And so that's a big thing for me. Like, if that's something that would make him uncomfortable, I don't want it to happen. I'd be okay with it growing long if it was like that Styles had like a head injury, like he got slashed across the back of the head and he couldn't shave it while the injury was healing, if you know what I mean. I wouldn't be that okay with it if he was doing it to be like more popular, because he's always, he went for Lydia like in full confidence, looking the way he looks. Like he's never been, you know, sometimes he sort of talks down about himself, but he's never seemed to want to change who he is. You know, he wants what he wants for who he is. And I appreciate that, and I feel like that it wouldn't be a plot point I'd like if he was trying to sort of gain popularity by style. I'm sure that they'll make it work, whatever happens. Or maybe Dylan will get his way and they'll just keep it short.
Yeah, I mean, whatever they do, I have confidence that they'll do it right, so I'm not too worried. I was definitely in the minority when I voted for either one works for me, although 627 other people agree with me, so that's boosts my confidence a little bit. For me, like, I mean, either one does work, but I have to say that the buzz cut looks like Styles, and the longer hair looks like Dylan, and I have trouble picturing Styles with Dylan's hair, you know what I mean? So, like,
I mean,
I don't know.
The one big objection I had to the surroundings of this poll and everything was that there are a lot of people who are objecting to the long hair because they are holding on to ideas of Styles that are not actually canon. Like, there are a lot of people who have emotional attachment, apparently, to Styles having a buzz cut because they have made up in fan fiction or, you know, have read a certain fan fiction or have just gone with a fandom trope that Styles has this short hair done in support of his mother, who allegedly died of cancer, and that he shaved his head when she did, and that he's always kept doing it in memory of her. This is nothing to do with the show at all. Nothing. We don't know how Styles' mother died. This is just a made-up plot of fanfiction, which is fine. I like a lot of fanfiction. But I feel like if you hang on to a fandom idea that's not actually canon, and you put emotional investment into it enough that it dictates what you want to happen on the show, then the show will always disappoint you. You need to focus on what's actually canonically happening in the show first. That's where your first emotional attachment needs to be, because otherwise, if you just hang on to a fanon idea, the show is never going to satisfy you, so I don't know why you're bothering, if you know what I mean.
It's really interesting in general, just like the way that the fandom has associated this and like thought so much about it.
Yeah. And it's great. Like, it's fine to theorize and like have your meta and have your fan fiction and have your tropes. But if you are more invested in that than what the canon is delivering to you, then you're not appreciating the show properly, and it's always going to disappoint you. Like, I just don't understand that.
Yeah. Like you can't live in fandom for like, you have to like also think about the canon and what's actually happened, you know?
Yeah.
And it's so interesting to me, just because I'm sure that no matter what they choose, two episodes in, maybe even like 45 minutes into the episode, we're just gonna be like, okay,
yeah,
you know,
it's like cool, getting a whatever. New doctor. It's like Doctor Who. Like you're like, no, it's the worst thing that's ever to happen to you. And then one episode, you're like, no, that's my doctor. Like, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And like, because I don't know if what Jeff expected when he asked everyone, because I'm sure he didn't expect a reaction this strongly.
Yeah.
Especially there's this one person on Tumblr called Brainwolf who wrote this huge, like 2,100 word post about why Sal's hair should stay short.
And how and he like responded and all to it. And
he was
thing.
Like, he was just like, all that for hair? Like,
yeah. I mean, and that person does write a lot of really good meta that I've read before that I appreciate. But that, I mean, Jeff's response to that was like, this is too much kind of thing, you know? And I've read other meta of hers or his that was really clever. But again, it is too focused on your own ideas, which it's cool to have them. But if it's making you dislike the canon, maybe you should stick with what's going on with the canon first and see how you feel about that.
Exactly.
Yeah. The next bit of news we have here is sort of Hypable specific. And this is a shout out to Tariq too, because he does all these amazing Hypable battleships. And it's so exciting. We've got it going on over at the site right now. If you guys haven't had a chance to look at it yet, or you didn't even know what was going on, we had Styles and Derek go up against Jess and Nick from New Girl, and Styles and Derek killed them, which I was so happy about. I voted for Derek. And that was really exciting. So now we know the next round is coming up, which Styles and Derek will be up against Elena and Damon. That will go down on the 22nd of November. So make sure you guys head over to hypable.com and find the post and vote for who you want to go on. And Tarek, I know you're just as conflicted as I am, because we both like the Vampire Diaries. And I am such a big Elena and Damon shipper. And I don't know what I'm going to do yet. I don't know who
it is. Because it's a canon ship and a non-canon ship as well, and that's quite difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they've finally started actually happening on Vampire Diaries, which is insane and awesome. But it's the first battle, like, this whole, like, during all of battleships, I'm really torn, because every other one is, like, really easy, but this one's just really tough.
Well, I'm not telling you guys or you listeners to spam the cast or creators of the shows or anything like that, but some of the creators and people involved in some of our fandoms have promoted battleships, so if anyone happens to come across polite ways to inform Teen Wolf about battleships, I know that they supported After Elton's fandom battle in regards to Steric, so maybe they'll be interested in ours, but don't spam in a creepy way.
Oh my gosh, because the day
we accidentally all tweeted Jeff in a row, literally accidentally, and I felt really awkward about it. So
like four of us at the same time, we're like, he like retweeted us, and we're like, oh yay, and because he retweeted us, we're just like, oh,
hey,
by the way,
did you see our battleships? And it was really bad. So if there's a nice way to do it, let them know, but if there's a creepy way to do it, don't do it. They've been very nice to us in the past couple of weeks. Jeff has retweeted a bunch of our articles and answered some questions, so that's cool.
And Orny Adams, too, he's done a couple, and yeah, we're really appreciative of that. So just make sure you guys head over to hypeable.com when that comes up, 22nd November. Whoever you vote for will be fine. Just vote, and we'll be happy. Okay, the last bit of news we've got here is another spoiler of the week that Jeff has given us. And he gave us the title of the second episode, which we did already learn earlier from Spoiler TV, and that's going to be Chaos Rising. But he also gave us a little short synopsis for this, and literally it's like a sentence. I was really hesitant to even call it a synopsis, but he just says that Derek and Scott are fighting side by side for their lives. And then we've got episode 303, which will be called Fireflies. And he says for that one, Scott and Derek will be asking for help from an unexpected person. Mm. So, you know, three questions for you guys. Who are Derek and Scott going to be fighting against? Do you think Fireflies is important? Should we be trying to glean some sort of information from this? And who do you think they're going to ask for help from as the unexpected person?
I'm thinking possibly either Scott's mom or, and this is very spoilers, either Scott's mom or the guidance counselor. Because the guidance counselor has really stayed away from everything at this point, and they don't know about her yet. But those aren't necessarily, I think Scott's mom is more unexpected than anything else.
I want to say Chris Argent or Peter, but I don't know if Peter's unexpected at this point. I mean, I think they're just trying to avoid him, so I don't know. In regards to the title, I don't know, all the titles are so relevant, like the Tell, Heart Monitor, these episodes, like, but prior to that, I wouldn't have been able to tell you what they were going to be about. So Fireflies, right. I'm sure it's going to be relevant, but I'm like racking my brain as to what it could potentially mean, and I don't know. And who they're going to be fighting against, I mean, I'm presuming it's going to be like the introduction of the Alpha Pack, like maybe we'll meet one of them in the first episode and then we'll get the whole lot in the second episode, or maybe Deucalion, our best friend, will come and face them one-on-one. I'm just glad they're fighting together.
Yeah, me too. For now, I have a feeling they're going to be split apart later on, but yeah, it's nice to see that they're going to be fighting side by side. Okay, so we're going to get into our listener feedback to round out the episode right now. The first one comes from Twitter, from @vote_steric, nice name, I like that. And they just ask, any theories on the different alpha forms? And Natalie and I have kind of covered this a little bit before, but Tark, we want to get your take on this. Do you have any theories for why some of them have different alpha forms?
I honestly think it's personality based. I feel like we didn't really get to know Derek's sister very well before she transformed, but she was like a full-on like wolf, which I think maybe, because I want to say maybe her personality, and this is totally guessing at this point, but her personality was more all about being a werewolf and not about like just like defending herself and focusing on her primal instincts, and maybe that's why she was a wolf. Whereas Peter is definitely more of like a tortured soul, and he's like, he works both in his human form and his wolf form to like get what he wants. So that's why he's kind of more of like a cross hybrid human wolf thing. And then there's Derek, and Derek is definitely more human than anything else. He walks around as human more often than anyone else does, or of the werewolves from that, his sister and Peter. And so I feel like maybe the more you focus on life and go about the way you are a werewolf affects how your alpha form changes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. This is a really weird comparison, and I don't know why I'm thinking about this, but I keep thinking like Pokemon or something, like they have these different levels and like I don't know, but you know, it could do something with the amount of experience or something like that. I don't know. Weird comparison of the day, I guess.
And Derek hasn't upgraded to Charizard yet.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay, the next one comes from Twitter as well, and this is from @sunshipper52. And they ask, if there was a Teen Wolf and a The Vampire Diaries crossover, would Lydia and Tyler Lockwood be siblings? Because the same actress plays their mom, or maybe cousins, maybe their mothers are twins. And I have to tell you, thank you so much for bringing this up, because I was rewatching the episode earlier today, actually, and I was like, I know her. Why do I know her? And I I hadn't watched Vampire Diaries. I watched it between the last time I watched Teen Wolf and then when we're doing this rewatch now. So I wouldn't have known this before, but I was like, I know that actress. Where do I know her from? And you just answered the question. So thank you so much for that. And I think that this is such a cool theory. And as much as I don't, you know, you guys know that I don't want vampires in the show or anything like that. If there ever was any sort of crossover, this would be really cool. And I like the idea that the mothers are twins or something. And, you know, they have these things going on. I think that would be really cool. You watched the show, Tarek. What do you think about this?
I love it, just because I love the connection between the two. I think the only issue I have is just one, like, they don't really look alike, like Tyler Lockwood and Lydia. They're not really the same. But I love the idea of, like, having a Lockwood that is immune to everything supernatural. And just, like having Lydia, like, just be that one person in that whole family that doesn't have the werewolf gene is just would be really interesting.
Is that a werewolf family on Vampire Diaries?
Yes, yeah. So the Lockwoods are all, like, it's a line of werewolves.
That would be interesting, seeing as Lydia is immune, so maybe she was, like, placed somewhere else, like, and maybe she's secretly adopted and doesn't know it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, like, she's the freak of the family.
Didn't they film in the same town for a while, and they, like, know the Vampire Diaries cast pretty well? Like,
because I believe... Didn't Teen Wolf film in Atlanta?
Yeah, for a while.
Yeah, so that's where Vampire Diaries films as well.
Yeah, so maybe they're, like, doing it. Maybe it's, like, Ninja Turtles and, who is it? Daredevil. In one of the comic verses, allegedly the same accident that created Daredevil created the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And it's, like, canonically true, like, and you can see, like, tiny bits of stuff drawn in, and but they're totally different, like, worlds and canons. It's really funny, but I doubt that's the case here, but it would be interesting.
It would be cool to have them sort of play this along the edges and not actually do a crossover, but kind of make references back and forth that maybe they do exist in the same world or something, but, you know, never actually do anything about it.
Yeah,
that would be neat for fans of both shows.
And then the last bit that we had, we just got an email just before we actually went on air from Joe McKenna, who on Tumblr is Gryffindor1991. And he sent us a really cool email, which I'm just going to read. It says, "Hi guys, I just wanted to say that I love this podcast. You guys are awesome for making it." Thank you. That was my interjection. Thank you. "I just wanted to share the random fact that I've started a rewatch of Teen Wolf with my mom. I never thought she would like it because she never seems to be able to sit and watch anything else I like. I was watching Fury from season 2 and she happened to be in the room and she got really into it and was on the edge of her seat. I started from the beginning and she's seen the first 3 episodes and she really likes it." Well, that's really cool. My dad is really... I have friends who, like, their whole family watches Doctor Who, or they share fandoms and they know who they're, you know, not fandom, but they have interests. And, you know, one of my roommates, her dad, like, knows everything, you know, all the stuff that she likes. My dad's really, really bad at that. Like, he doesn't know anything. So I'm kind of jealous when people have that kind of family thing. But yeah, he's also said, "I had 2 discussion questions that don't really have anything to do with any episodes, but that's fine. I know everyone loves Danny, so do you think Danny should be bitten so that he would be in the show more? I read a fanfiction one day where Danny was bitten and I started thinking about that. I also read a few where Styles gets bitten. I know none of us actually wants that one to happen, but if it had to happen, what sort of circumstances would make it a good idea? I think Styles would make a great werewolf, but I would prefer him to stay human. His humanity is one of the best parts of the show. I just wanted to see someone else's view on these ideas. I hope you guys keep up the awesome work. From Joe." Well, thank you, Joe. We obviously did just talk a bit about Styles as a human, but what do you guys think about Danny, and also about, like, what circumstances you'd be okay with Styles being a werewolf?
This was a great question. Yeah, I think I kind of have more feelings about this than I realize. So Danny, I think he would make a great werewolf. I see him as a werewolf now that it's mentioned, and I think that would be really neat to see him turn. So I'm totally okay with that. I mean, I like him human, but, you know, if it had to happen, I would definitely be okay with it. As far as Styles goes, I think if it were to happen, I'd like to see it happen where this was the only way to save his life. If he was dying, like, if he was literally on the edge and he was just about to die, and the only way to save him would be to bite him so he could heal, that would definitely be a possibility. And, I mean, don't even want to think about Styles ever dying. So if it was between that and him turning into a werewolf, I vote werewolf.
Yeah, true. Danny, I think, would be a really, like, smart, if he wanted to do that. Like, I think Danny would be a really smart addition to anyone's pack. So, yeah, that would be pretty cool. I mean, I'd like him to be a plot point again. Or I wouldn't mind him being, like, a human pack member as well. Maybe he could, like, wield his lacrosse balls and, like, put some flaming balls in his stick and throw them at people or something like that. But, yeah, if he wanted to be a werewolf, he'd be a really good one. You know, he's very chill. Like, I mean, kind of like Boyd, I guess. Like, he wouldn't be a crazy, irrational person, I don't think. So that'd be a good thing.
I love the idea of Danny being a werewolf. Like, just the thing I also love about Danny is that he's a gay character whose entire character and personality isn't based upon the fact that he's gay. He's just like a normal character, like a normal guy who happens to be gay, and it's hysterical because they do it in all the right ways. And I feel like him as a werewolf would be so awesome. Although I do wish that Colton Haynes didn't leave the show, because I feel like they would make a fantastic pair. If, like, they were both werewolves, like, that would just be so awesome. I miss Colton Haynes already, just thinking about him, but I think Danny as a werewolf would be epic. And as far as Styles turning into a werewolf, I love your idea of, like, him almost having to be on, like, the edge of death and, like, having to be brought back. But I also kind of like the idea, and this is kind of really maybe, like, silly or cruel, or, like, it doesn't make much sense, but him accidentally getting bitten by, like, Scott or something. Or, like, by a new werewolf. It would be really funny because, like, he would forever be holding it against him. And, like, it would just be really hysterical.
Okay, well, I hope that everyone enjoyed this episode of our show. And that anyone who's rewatching is enjoying their rewatching. Thank you very much to Joe for that email. It was a cool one to get, and I'm glad that we got it before we recorded. If anyone wants to send in any tweets or emails or, you know, Tumblr ask, whatever you want to, just, you know, talk to us as much as you want. That's really cool. So yay for that. We'll go now so I can start editing and these guys can go to bed. We will see you soon. In 2 weeks' time, we've got episodes 107 and 108. And yeah, for now, we will say bye-bye and thank you heaps to Tariq for coming on. I hope you had a good time. Did you have a good time?
Oh yeah, it was a bunch of fun. That's... especially old Styles talk. That was my favorite.
Yeah, that's cool. So you can all, and if you miss us in the meantime, you can go look at all of our other podcasts. We've got Tariq on Sorkin's series and Vampire Hype. We have Karen on Onceable. I've got Glee Chat, and we just did our first live episode last week, which was interesting. No, it was funny. A video live with Google Plus, which maybe we can do one day for this if we want to do like a live stream chat with anyone who's interested. We could try that one day. But for now, I will say bye-bye and bye to you guys.
Bye. Yeah, have a good night.
And now there's a fucking plane. Okay, hold on.
This is usually how the whole podcast goes, just so
I
you know.
I need to live in a house that doesn't have a plane path going over it. It's perfect. So.